key. Oh, this is part one. That's why we don't have this. Somebody was asking why we don't use the podium. It takes a while to build it up, you know.
We're working.
We're working. It's getting there. Closer to the end here. Today's Thursday, no?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like Monday we'll be ready for the Appa Sampradayas.
Will there be a break?
A break.
In February?
You want a break?
No. I don't want a break. No. I was just thinking.
I think we miss 2 days.
Okay.
I think the 21st, 22nd.
Oh.
Like that. Oh. And then up to the 19th. We have the three classes. And then when we open again on Monday, which would be what? That's 25th. Then we'll start with the one class in the morning.
Okay.
6 to 7, yeah. Because that'll be then, you know, that's when the GBC starts showing up and everything.
But what about the Pune?
Pune is 20th to 24th.
Oh, okay.
Like that. So 20th is Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah. And 24th is Saturday, so we only miss 2 days of class.
Yeah.
It means the boys go earlier.
Yeah.
But they're not giving class, so it's not a problem.
And their holidays? On 25th?
That I'm not sure when their holidays. You know when they're holidays.
25th is the first.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we generally just run this class, but 6 to 7 in the morning.
Huh? Only one.
Only one, yeah. He's all the way through Gaur Purnima. And then after Gaur Purnima is over, then we go back to the three again.
Oh, okay.
Certainly there's so many things happening with devotees and classes. And also at that time, a lot of times you get temple devotees coming over. But they won't sit past seven generally because of the darshan. That's what we did in the other years. It's just before Akshaya Tritiya, which is 10 days before Nisshinga Chaturdasi. Like that. Then at that point, then all the classes stop.
Middle of May.
Yes. So then that gives us another. It's generally basically 8 weeks after Gaur Purnima. Is the classes run full.
This year is not going to happen because this year Gaur Purnima is really late.
But it's late. But then Akshaya Tritiya, because it's all up by the moon, everything's late.
8 weeks.
Yeah, it still works out because it's all by. It's only the Purushottam month put something in there, you know. So sometimes one area starts to get a little shorter, another area, and then the Purushottam month goes in there.
Okay.
Like this, it came in the summer, so we started so late, but then everything else is very late.
Right.
You know? So it eventually works out, but it's just where it's going slower. It's basically the same. Okay. Harih Om Sahana Vavatu.
Sahana bhunaktu sahaviyam karavavahai tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, so some particular points of the Gaudiya philosophy and religion not found in other Vaishnava schools. Generally speaking, is whatever's there is in their school. It's just not prominence, or it's not brought out in that particular way. It's just like all the four sampradayas except the rasa of the gopis of Krishna and Vrindavan. But it's just whether that is the rasa for them, or they're just appreciating it. You know, as we said, from one rasa you can appreciate the other rasa, right? As long as it's the same, you know, it means it's the same species, meaning devotees, right? Like that. So then, Does that make sense? But what's unique is, what comes out more unique is when all the different points of all the sampradayas are understood at once, right? So the chinta veda veda tattva, that aspect then brings out things that you won't get if you just have one or the other, right? So it's not that you have one and you have the other and you combine it, so then you get, you know, double that or both benefits. You actually get even more because of the aspect of that combination, then there's, or that vision, you can see things or understand things that may not be well appreciated in from the other perspectives. Yeah? Like that. So it's, in other words, it's always very important that there's not a fight or a difference of opinion between the various lines, because they're all Vaishnava lines. It's all Krishna speaking to these particular individuals, right? So, therefore, its beginning is exactly the same. You know, it's just because the devotee, you have the element of ashray and vishay, then that aspect of ashray might change, right? Hearing the same knowledge, someone appreciates Krishna in this way, someone in that way, right? So these four major ways to appreciate. The two varieties of that oneness, the oneness and difference, and the difference, right? And then you have the simultaneous oneness and difference, right? That's the original. Because oneness, you get two lines following that. The difference, you got one line following that. And then that there is oneness and difference, then you have one line following that. Does that make sense? So this is the original. So it's not that there's some points, but because of that being originalness, this has some elements stand out. Right? So five, for the Gaudiyas, bhakti is the bhajan or seva, loving service to the Lord, not merely upasana or meditation. In fact, no sadhana can achieve its perfection, moksha, without bhakti to the Supreme Lord. Right, but we also see that Ramanuja is making that point. But it's a matter of, we will emphasize the point. While they will make the point and then take it that's the definition's been made, now we focus on the elements of sadhana, or in Varnashram, or these other elements that are useful in their service. Right? But we'll always be coming back with that. Why? Because that formality is, how you say, means, in other words, the situation you're in is very important, because it's in that situation that you'll make a judgment on what best way to serve Krishna, right? From the situation, there's an inspiration to serve, and what services would be best, right? So the situation is very important. Right? That's why Yoga Maya or Mahamaya play such a prominent role. But the difficulty comes up is that it's the situation that we might consider in connection with us, right? Not just we're connected to that situation, so how to work, but it's the situation that we can enjoy. Right? Does that make sense? And then from that, then the ingredients, in other words, the interaction with others tends to be, they're just parts of the field. So I'm operating the field, I'm getting the enjoyment. Does that make sense? So they're just ingredients of rasa. Right? It means our rasa, right? We're the one singular person that's having the dream, right? You know? Everybody else is just part of our dream. So that's the dream, right? You know, everybody else just, you know. So the idea is that the living entity, so for Vrindavan, if you're going to have pure, so for pure devotional service, it doesn't matter because it's pure, because it's always connected to Krishna. So the situation, everything's always connected to Krishna. So therefore, it's pure devotional service. Now, there's no problem in it. But in pure unalloyed, it's not even the situation that's so important. It's just the interaction with Krishna. It's just the devotion to Krishna. That is the outstanding feature. Does that make sense? So it's a little more subtle. Right? So that's why we see is that even though the forms are there, we have very strict traditional forms. In fact, as we were discussing previously, is that our system that we use, our Pancharatrik system that we're using, is much more elaborate than any of the Sri's Madhvas, you know, that they use. I think probably any other Sampradaya, basically. It's just much more technical and elaborate, much more esoteric elements. The means the variety of elements is more. Right? Others have less elements, more exact situations are applied in, and then there's constant repetition. Mm-hmm. Right? So its complicatedness or its seemingly elaborateness or ritualness is simply the constant re-performance of the same rituals for a slightly different situation. You know, it's just like in Vrindavan, they'll sit Krishna down and they'll do all the so many different things in one place. Right? There's a minor changing, but it's not much. It's just like Krishna will be, they'll be standing on the banks of, you know, let's say Radhakund and discussing things and laughing and joking. Then they're taking bath in Radhakund. Then after they come out, dry themselves and again sit on the side of Radhakund. Mm-hmm. So even though they've changed seats three times, we don't make that into a formality. Right? Mm-hmm. In other words, it's part of one scene. Mm-hmm. But in Vaikuntha, even though it's one scene, the room for bathing is completely separate from the room from dressing, from the room from eating, from the room from resting, the room from darshan. So in that way, the five different asanas are completely separate. So the Lord going from one room to the next, it's a whole festival, you know, with the music and the umbrellas and everything like that. You know, going in that formal going that he goes and sits, he's received at the new asan like that, you know, which is the reception's always the same, right? You know, they say asanam swagatam pagyam pardyam argyam achmaniyam, right? And if it's more formal, maru parka punar achman, that's every asan, right? And then having gotten there also, then the worship is there. So dup deep, ganda pushpa dup deep naivedya, right? So those 10 or 12 items means he's come to the new seat, so he gets those 10 or 12 items. Then the particular worship of that seat is done. Then if it's bath, now we have the bath. Then he's finished the bath and all that, and then now he gets dressed. Then he goes to eat. So when he comes to eat, then he's received and worshipped. Then the eating goes on. You understand? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So we don't make so much distinction between it because it's not so formal and regal. But it's not that all those asanas aren't there. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't eat there and then lie right down there and sleep. You know, he gets it goes like that. But it's all part of just this one pleasant lifestyle. Right? The other one is also lifestyle, but very formal. And does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. There's nothing missing in any one of them. It's just where they put the emphasis, where they put the flavor, right? You know, just like we saw that even in Dasya, there's so many kinds of, they're all servants. But one has a specific servant, one is always intimately there, one is very, is surrendered, so one is feels that I belong to the Lord. You know, so you have all those different things. And it gives a different flavor, because rasa means flavor. So that's where the difference is in the rasa, is in the flavor. Right? So, but we do meditation. Right? So one is always thinking of the Lord, but it's not necessarily so formal. Right? Does that make sense? So even though we have technically as many, if not more, rules than any of the other lines, but you don't notice it. You know? Therefore, you know, so much difference in the different devotees, how they dress or how they do things, or, you know, the kind of shoes, or, you know, so many different things they have. You know, each thing is unique, right? You know? Like that. You know. So now, according to this morning, you know, the discussion this morning, those shoes that broke, so it was held together with some string, right? So does that indicate like more of a renunciation? So possibly now we're dealing with a Shanta Ras devotee here, or
very well,
you know, something like that. You know, so it's just
Shanta and also immersed in meditation, because they're here, nobody cares.
Yeah. Now they're there, and still nobody cares. You know? Or they're there. Yeah, yeah, like that. So the avatude aspect is there, yeah. So you know, see? So, see, like this, you can see these are all the anubhavs, as you can tell. Yes. Okay. In fact, no sadhana can achieve its perfection without bhakti to the Supreme Lord. Because you see, sometimes when we're talking with the other lines, that means they're already taking it for granted. They've already mentioned that you can't do anything without bhakti, so it's no question of anything like that. But then, you know, and by the grace of the Lord, right? So therefore, you're performing it to please the Lord, and by His grace, you get that realization, you get that vision of the Lord, you get that inspiration, all those different things. But to just focus on the activity itself, the particular sadhana, the particular aspect of it, right? So it's already understood. You already remember all that. Right, but for us, it's constantly reminded, because anything that goes a little bit into karma jnana, then we don't. So the others, if it's connected to the Lord without any material considerations, then it's pure bhakti, you know. But we'll take it that it's that, but we'll make it very clear that it has to be favorable to the Lord and without karma jnana. They're saying the same thing, but this is much more explicit. Right, because we're trying to start we're heading for a pure unalloyed, right? So it's not the situation, it's not anything else. It's just that interaction with Krishna. You know, there's no
So then, in Braja Bhakti, that mood changes from moment to moment. That means that then the devotee's focus is more than anywhere else.
Yes, it's more intense, it's more focused. It means, in other words, the sthayi bhava, the rati, the mukhya rati, is much more intense than anywhere else. And so therefore also that's why you bring out all these aspects of the santuri bhavas and all that. These are things that can be changed. A santuri bhava can last a moment. Because a moment is like how much time you're actually conscious of. Does that make sense? So that means they can constantly be moving, and so the intensity is much greater. So the rasa is much thicker, you know? Is that it would be like you're looking at something, you know, and you can see it very, you know, clearly and everything, or you immerse that in some water, but it's very clear, still water. You can still see it, but there's still a difference because of that. So Vrindavan's like that. The rasa is so thick, so everything is seen through that rasa. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's like you're saying, it's much more intense and much more focused. Because pure devotion takes, you know, a perfect amount of concentration, but pure unalloyed takes even more. Yeah. So that's why it's, you know, it's rare to have been given. It's the highest. Like that. So because it's, you're dealing with Swayam Krishna. You're dealing with much more qualities and much more freedom. You know, it's just like if you're in a situation with people that you're not very comfortable with, your activities will be formal or informal?
Formal.
Right. Now, if you're with people you're really comfortable with,
more informal.
More informal. But let's say like they're the best, closest, you know, full trust, full everything.
Then it's most informal.
Yeah, so in other words, you'll see the most of the mentality, more craziness, more wildness, the more difference of things. You know, it doesn't have to be consistent. It just has to match what's going on. You know, does that make sense? So you might talk in one accent there, but then they say one word, and then you talk in a different, and then, you know, you completely change. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Braja Krishna, he can do that because of the Brajbasis have that kind of focus and love. That intimacy is so great. So you're seeing Krishna in his most natural state. Well, as you go out of there, then it's formalized more and more. Mathura is a little more formalized, right? Dwarka is more than that, but still, all the rasas, and it's still very natural. But then when you go to Vaikuntha, then it's like very formal. You know, he's just God. That's just the way it is. He thinks I am God because everyone's referring to him as God. You know, in Dwarka, they know he's God, but they refer to him as Krishna and this and that. He's one of the Yadus. And they know he's Paramatma. You know, but it's not very prominent. But in Vrindavan, it's kind of like, even if they know, it's like, who cares? You know, that basically they, you know, when they're in the pastime of the Yoga Maya, it's not something that they refer to.
They find out from time to time, but forget quickly again.
That, but also when they refer to God, they refer to God. Is Narayan, because he's God, you know. Because Krishna is not God; he's just Braja Kumar. So that's why, when those associates come here, they can argue the philosophy very well. So when you're talking about the position, then you're talking about you know, the godness of the Lord. Then when they talk about rasa, then they talk about inside the pastimes. So there's also no contradiction there. You know, because they are Vaishnavas. They do worship Vishnu. That's why you can call all the Vaishnavas. But within Vaishnav, then there's subcategories. Like that. You know, Vaishnavas just means Vishnu, Karshanas, or Gaudiyas. So you have that difference. But everybody's Vaishnava. Six. Complete self-surrender is not a separate process from bhakti. Rather, it is its basic principle. Because there's the element of I'm surrendering myself and then taking up the devotional process. Because it's a natural form. But here it's that the performance of bhakti means you have to surrender, and surrender means you perform bhakti. So you don't make so much distinction. Does that make sense? Yeah. Prema and not moksha is the supreme purusharta. Right? Because when they mean moksha, they take it as, we'll say prema is the supreme, so we'll put it as the fifth. It's not that they'll disagree, they'll just say moksha only means being in a relationship with the Lord. Right? So it's more that position of being the Lord's servant. Right? Rather than there's liberation, the spiritual, and then bhakti. Because they don't count liberation without being in devotional service. Because it's temporary, so it's not something less, so you don't worry about it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So basically what they do is they just skip. It means you have those going after liberation, so they acknowledge that. But then there's real liberation. You understand? Mm-hmm. Well, we'll put there's liberation, then there's bhakti, which is the real liberation. Yes. So we'll just put it in its own category rather than just it's the real category of moksha. Does that make sense? See, it means it's all the same. And eight, a Vaishnava has a status superior to any varna or ashram. Because the others will work very much within varna and ashram. Because Vaikuntha means it's formalized, so you're going to be within that anyway, right? And Vaikuntha, basically everyone's grihasthas, they have their, you know, life, they have their particular service, their position. There's a hierarchy there, you know, so it's all part of that magnificence, because it's a Kshatriya culture, like that. So that's the. But for us, then the Vaishnava has a superior status. Like we see the Pushtis, then they'll also say is there's the Maryada and then there's Pushti, right? So Maryada is, you know, only Brahman, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. The men can be involved in that, but the Pushti, then anybody can be involved. Right? So it's just, you know, that's how it will work. But even there, the others will be, everyone's involved in their position in Varnashram. Right, so therefore, in the Vaikuntha ones, is that even Shudras could be performing their service to the Lord as in their position as Shudra. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that aspect. Well, here we're just putting, they're outside of that, but we socially function within, because there's no better social system than the Varnashram system. It's Krishna's system. So since you have to interact, you use the social system, that's Varnashram. But it's not that the Varnashram is just like you want to cut vegetables, you use a knife. You know, but it's not that, you know, we join a knife club and, you know, everybody's got their knife and, you know, you're special and they got your name engraved on it. You know, stuff like that. You don't have to do that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj?
Yeah.
So you said that Vaikuntha is a Kshatriya culture?
Yes.
And Vrindavan is a which culture?
I mean, it's the predominance is the Vaishya culture.
Vaishya culture.
Yeah. Because it's within the dvijas, so they follow all the rules, but at the same time it's very relaxed. Yes. It's not as formal as the you know, in other words, there's much more restriction within the Brahmas and Kshatriyas, so this is a little bit more open.
Mainly because Krishna is having like a Vaishya pastime.
It's just that it affords more of a relaxed position, but you don't have to worry about all the mentalness. You know what I'm saying? The Shudra culture is too mental.
Yes.
You know, so you can't have a consistency there. You don't know what you'll get. When you walk into the back door of the theater and walk inside, you do not know what you'll get. You just really don't. Everyone can be perfectly chirpy or completely bummed out or can we be lamenting, or no one wants to do anything today, or, you know, it's like anything you do is wrong. It's just you can't, and it's nothing consistent. It's just like, yeah. Like that. Yeah. I think there was a question the other day. You didn't have to, what was it? About, you know, about hells. Do you have to go like that? No, you don't have to go to the lower planets. You just have to walk backstage. Right? Brahminical culture is good for the meditation, because yes, what it's doing there is so much the meditation, but it's not meditation meaning that it's not the ritual of meditation, it's not the ritual of the worship, but it's the absorption, right? So then the Brahminical culture is very good for that, because you have very few things to distract you from that. They're all very direct. But in Vrindavan, it's that the point is you're in the house. Why would you go outside the house?
To get something.
Yeah. So that means for Vaishya, what are you getting?
Money.
Yeah, profit, right? So therefore, it's allowed that Krishna can go out with the cows, because there's profit, they're Vaishyas, right? And they're just kids, and it's just watching the cows, so then they can really, you know, play and do everything like that. But if the Kshatriyas, then it's very formal. If it's Brahmins, you got school to go to, you got homework, you got, you know, rituals to perform. You understand? So there's nothing, it doesn't allow for that freedom. Right? And as we said, the Shudra allows freedom, but it's just too crazy. It's too inconsistent. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's the whole point. That's the taste of it, is that it's always changing and everything like that. They say, that's why the Shudra has to connect himself to the Dvija, because that's the masculine element. Right? It means like the feminine element is great because it creates the variety of the taste, but if it's not connected to the masculine element, then it just goes crazy. Right? So there has to have that stableness to create. You know? Like that. So that must be that connection too. But then you don't have the independence. Well, Vaishyas still have independence. Right? So it's a very nice, natural position to work from. Right? But it's not that they're all sitting there covered from head to toe with cow dung or something, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, so it's not like when they go to Mathura, wow, nobody's covered in cow dung. You know, so you don't get comments like that. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it just works.
Well, yes. Sometimes they mention that we have the Brahminical culture.
Yes.
And
yes, it means everybody else is. It's a bizarre example, so everyone's laughing. But he's laughing because he knows what he's talking about.
I guess I see the farmers.
Look at it. Yeah. They are. They're like covered. Look at them. Because you just take off the overalls and hang them up, and then you put them on the next day, and they get a little bit more cow dung. You know it's time to wash them when you don't have to hang them up, right?
So we talk about the Brahminical culture with them, and then we talk about the mentality of Vrindavan.
Okay. But the point is, because it's Shuddha Sattva, all of these realms are the Brahminical culture. You know what I'm saying? But it's just how they're expressing it through. Because ashram is the predominant element. So, because that's the predominant, that's the lifestyle, so the lifestyle is always that in the mode of goodness. So here it's pure goodness. So that's the common point. Now how they like to express it, that'll have that occupation. Because that sets the form, the structure. So we said before, so the structure is important, but it's just very natural in Vrindavan. You don't worry about it. You know, just like there's not a big thing in all the awe and reverence for the Brahmins, but the point is Brahmins are respected, so therefore Madhu Mangal, who's only a kid, because he's a Brahmin, then he can give instructions for the older gopis what they should be doing. Right? They'll come to him as a Brahmin and ask him, you know, even though they're Krishna's parents. Like that, but they'll come to Madhu Mangal and ask him what, you know, as a Brahmin, what would he advise that they do? Right? And so he'll give some advice that's very good for Krishna, you know, like that, you know, so like that. So that's where that element of rag comes in, spontaneous, because it's not so important. The rule is only there to spark rasa. So the rule isn't important on its own, and rasa can't be expressed without the rules. Right? So. Yeah.
But if Nanda Baba takes care of the cows and they are not covered with cow dung, what's the difference?
They're a little more sophisticated. They have more space.
They wash more.
That's true. They'll take 3 baths a day, you know, so at least 2. Morning and evening. Like Krishna, he goes out, he has his bath in the morning. He goes out, milks the cows and that, comes back, takes his bath, then gets ready for breakfast. Then he goes out all day. When he comes back in the evening, then he has his bath. And then the evening meal and you know, interactions. You know, like that. So that's where the grihastha takes bath twice a day comes from. Right? Like that. So that's the right. That makes sense. But Brahmins, they'll take bath 3 times a day.
The
Gayatri, but also just the nature of their program is different. Their occupation is always morning, evening, like that. So they have the noontime when they can take. But the Vaishyas go out. The Kshatriyas are in court. and all that. So Kshatriya could take a bath the third time, but much of the time wouldn't necessarily. You know what I'm saying? Because he's just going to come in and formally eat, sit around and talk like that. Does that make sense? But morning you take a bath because you're sleeping all night, and evening you take a bath because otherwise how do you hang out with the queens? You know, so no bath, no hanging out. It's simple. You don't have to. So in other words, certain parts of the Varnashram system are automatically, how you say, followed. Okay, seven. Okay, eight. Nine. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is directly the combined forms of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. He is a Kali Yuga avatar and the Vistara of Krishna Prema in the form of Gopi Bhava or Madhurya Rasa. Right, and here when we say Gopi Bhava, it's that mood of that full surrender, that pure unalloyed devotion. So all the Brajabasis have that. So that aspect, the Gopi Bhava, is common. But at the same time, it's a uniqueness of also that Madhurya Rasa. Does that make sense? So that's why someone can follow the Gaudiya and be a cowherd boy or in the parental Rasa. It doesn't matter, because that surrender is the same. It's just it's expressed through which kind of Rati. Yes.
How others view Lord Chaitanya, not his combined form?
Not necessarily. They don't get into that. It's just Vishnu avatar like that. That's how they'll see.
And they don't accept him as the avatar of Kali Yuga?
That they probably would, but it's because he's a hidden avatar, so it's not necessarily that people always catch it. But like even the Shankaras, then they accept him as the greatest sannyasi. So if nothing else, they accept him from that platform. Mm. But I think all of them accept him like that.
Yeah. And they worship. They don't worship him separately or anything.
No, no. I mean, that means they don't have a specific worship of him at all. So he's not like he's not part of their worship. You know, the Shris and Madhvas, then it's definitely just their guru. And you know, the Lord of Vaikuntha and those devotees that you have to go through, Lakshmi and Garuda, Vishvakshena, that you have to worship to go through him. And the Nimbarkas and Vallabhas, they're worshiping Radha and Krishna, but then it'll be their guru and their line and all that. So Lord Chaitanya doesn't feature in their worship. Okay, 10. Worship of the Lord in his Aishwarya aspect according to the principles of Vaidhi Bhakti leads the devotee to liberation in Vaikuntha, Dwarka, or Mathura. But the Lord in his Madhurya aspect in Goloka is attained only by those following Rag Marg. Right? But then the thing is, Rag Marg is also then the part of the Nimbarkas. They follow that. And it's just a different mood of Vrindavan. I think it was back, and I'm not sure when it was, but maybe, I'm not sure what the year was, but it would have been early part of the last century, that the Nimbarkas, then they approached the Gaudiyas. I think they talked to Keshe, I think it was Keshamara. And they were saying that, you know, the Gaudiyas have taken this whole worship of Radha Krishna and Raganuga and Vrindavan from the Nimbarkas, so we're actually, you know, starting our own thing. We've stolen there. Mm-hmm. They have the rights to this, right? Like that. They wanted to start that. And I think he mentions, says, well, it means then you have to have a basis, and that you have no, there is no historical evidence that Nimbarkacharya existed. It means we know he did, but you can't, in a court, you wouldn't be able to establish his existence. So they just kind of looked at him, nodded, and walked off, and that was it. You know? but they actually officially tried to start a thing to get the Gaudiyas to you know,
copyrights.
Yeah, copyrights. Yeah. Now, I guess otherwise we'd have to consider ourselves part of their line or something. Mm-hmm. Ekatmya or Sayuja Mukti cannot be achieved by only jnana or meditation, or else.
Or else.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Or else what? Or else. Can't be achieved by this. So. Moksha is attainable only through bhakti, by surrendering to the Supreme Lord, not otherwise. Right, so we're even saying sayuja can only be obtained through bhakti. Right? So in other words, you can't get liberated because the Lord is that. So there has to be some element of the devotion. So that's why even then the smartest, they'll follow the path of bhakti to try to get liberation. Right? Mm-hmm. So they'll have more of a chance at it than those who don't. Mm-hmm. But for us, we just generally don't even really worry about it because it's just not something important. You know? They're like little kids like eating mud. So it's that, well, not that we have, we just don't bother, you know. We just eat food, you know, so we don't have a whole discussion about how it's not important, you know. We just show them, here, eat this, you know. But Madhvacharya, he also is bringing out this point, is that when he's called Sayuja, Sayuja means that absorption in the Lord, but through bhakti. It's only by bhakti you can get it. So whether he's indicating that he's meaning Sayuja, he's not accepting the Sayuja, you know, that the Mayavadis are talking about. And so Sayuja basic would mean what the Shantaras is. Right? And then you also have in Vallabhas, then that aspect of the Maryadas, they're worshiping the Lord, but through devotion. But the purpose is moksha. And so then by pleasing the Lord, they get moksha. So it's a fairly common, but we don't put very much emphasis on it. You know, we don't talk as much about it. We can, but we generally talk about it on the Brahman platform when we do talk about it. Well, they'll talk about it more in connection with the you know, it means just in their discussion about the Lord, they'll bring it out. But we'll discuss it, but only basically on the Brahman platform when we're showing the mechanics of the world and the universal form and all these different things. So that spirituality aspect, then we'll bring it out.
Sometimes you see a discussion between devotees that we actually don't aspire for liberation. But can that be understood in the language you just said, that because we aspire to please Krishna, liberation is already
included? Yeah, it's already included. Just like, you know, you don't aspire for getting a plate at lunch. You aspire for the lunch, right? Plates come along with it. And if it came down to it, we'd rather have the plate and no lunch or lunch and no plate. Yeah.
But so depending on the temperature of the lunch, it's very hot soup.
Yeah. I guess I give the example because I don't think it's soup is part of lunch. So soup doesn't compute. It means I have no problem with soup. I don't think of soup as lunch. You know, it's something more solid that you could get by with without a plate. You know. You know, because even right, you could eat it off the floor, yeah. Right? Soup would be a bit of a problem. You could, but it would be a bit of a problem.
Little straw.
Yeah, little straw. Bring your straw. Yeah, like that. 12. There exist 12 rasas or melas in relationship with the Lord. 7 are secondary and 5 principal. Out of these 5, Shakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya are found in their pure and complete manifestation, only in Goloka Vrindava. In Mathura, Dwarka, and Ayodhya Dham, these 3 rasas are also found, but in a mixed state, not pure. Mixed means, here it means not pure. I would just say in a mixed state. You know, it's like the others, is that they're the queens, but at the same time there's that element of that, you know, that position of the service or things like that, or Uddhava. He's close friend, but he's also servant. Or, you know, so you have these elements, but then in Vrindavan you just see them they're just friends, or just parents, or just...
So outside Vrindavan everything is mixed with servant?
Basically, you know. Mathura, that seems to be in its own kind of category. Because it's not quite Dwarka, but it's not quite Vrindavan. You know, it's just like you see many of the same Anubhavas and that as you see in Vrindavan when they see Krishna. But he's got 4 arms. You know, so it's kind of a unique balance. Because Mathura is where Mahanarayan is. Right? So that first expansion from Balaram is Mahanarayan. That's Krishna and Balaram in Mathura. Right? And then from him expands Shankarshan, Prajumna, Adiruddha, and Vasudeva. That's Krishna and Balaram in Dwarka. Right? And then again expands again, and then that's in Vaikuntha. Right? And then there's a technical way that expands in Vaikuntha. But you know, you have the four, and each one of them expands as three, and then there's each one of those that expands, I think, as two. So you end up with 24. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In Mathura, Krishna has four arms? Or
he
sometimes?
It means he has two, four. It doesn't seem to really matter. You see descriptions with two, you see descriptions with four. Yeah. It means when he first goes there, then you only hear about it in two. But it seems when he goes out and comes back, when they're in Mathura, then he'll have four arms. You know, so everyone's, you know, the ladies are on the roof, the this, that. It's all very similar kind of scene like in Vrindavan. It has some element of that spontaneity, but at the same time, is the environment that it's being done is very formal. Right? So it's kind of like formal activity is kind of more intimate mood. Right? You know, so it doesn't, it's, you know, while Dwarka, then it's more, then you have more of a balance. So then it works nicely. It has a clear rasa to it. Vrindavan's clear, Dwarka's clear. But Mathura seems to be a little bit, you know, so it seemed to be a certain time was there. Because it's the same group that was in Mathura, they all went to Dwarka. Right? You know, so he was there until Jarasandha came so many times, and then he went to, they started Dwarka. So it seems to be an actual kind of position between the two. Okay. 13. No incarnation other than Sri Krishna gives liberation to the demons when he kills them. Yeah, I guess I'm not sure what the others do with them. Stick them in the back pocket, or they get stuck under their nails.
In a description of the qualities of Vishnu Tattva, then when they kill demons, then they give them liberation.
Yeah, but maybe it's just that it comes out so much in the pastime. But the point is. But Krishna, like when he kills Shishupal, then you see him merge into Krishna's body. That's in Dwarka.
What about Lord Vishnu?
Yeah,
I was thinking about him too.
That you don't hear, because then he comes again. Because this is three lifetimes they come. So maybe they're working on that. Then they come as someone else. Or, you know, he killed... I can't remember what his name was, but one of those big, big demons, and then they come next life as Kamsa or Karna. No, it's some other. It means we've heard the names, they're quite famous. But the one of them, he had the benediction of having 100 kavachas on his body. Right? And so then Vishnu came, because you can only be killed by someone who's simultaneously meditating, you know, sitting in yoga asana, and fighting, which is impossible, right? But Narayan Rishi, we don't say Narayan Rishis, they're considered one person. So therefore, Nara sat down in meditation and Narayan fought with him. So he destroyed 99 of the kavachas, but then he left one of them, he just killed him straight without removing the kavacha, like that. So that's why then Karna was born with the kavacha on. That was the last of the 100. Maybe that they deal with those aspects, but the point is it's Vishnu who gives. So, you know, we'll bring this out. The others don't seem to so much, because otherwise, then you might think, "Wow, I'll be a demon to get liberation." You know, so it's like, good luck. You have to be that big. You know? You're not that big of a demon. 14. Only the Gaudiyas affirm the super excellence of the loving sentiment in the mood of separation, viraha or viparlamba. Now that's a unique element. It means others will talk about it, but it's within the sambhoga. Like the the Nimbarkas will give the example of Prema Sarovar. Right? They're sitting together, but each one of them thinks the other's gone, even though they're sitting right next to each other. And so therefore they're feeling that separation, though they're right next to each other. So that's as close as they breach separation. In 15 Parakiya Rasa is the special feature in the dealings between Krishna and the gopis. Because the others, it's there, but it's not brought out so much. It's not brought out. Seems this lota is inching its way over. He would have just had it crawl over on its own, but he thought everybody might get freaked out. Hand it over. Okay, so Appendix 1. Comparative analysis of the Vaishnav schools. Okay, 65. Okay, so a few pages. 1. Relation between God, matter, and the jiva, right? So they're chit, achit, ishwar. Your first point is sambandha, right? Differences, 1. Differences between Vallabha's pure monism and Ramanuja's qualified monism regarding the relationship between God's souls and the world. A. Ramanuja has accepted the individual soul in the world as forming the attributes or modes of God. Vallabha says that the relation of individual self and the world to God is that of a part to the whole. He does not regard individual soul and the world as inseparable from God in the sense of substance and attributes.
Can we accept both?
Yeah, means whatever anybody says, we accept that, but we accept it in the context of all the other points. So you don't have to overemphasize it. You know, like all the points Madhva makes, we accept that, but it has a particular context. Okay, so it's forming the attributes or modes of God. Okay, so in other words, you're taking the position, or you're taking the qualities, right? Because that's the thing, is Ramanuja emphasizes the qualities, while Vallabha seems to emphasize more the position. Does that make sense? In other words, we're all, so the element of like the part and parcel, that we're all part and parcel, so we're part of the complete whole. That's one way of dealing. The other is that all the manifestations are all the different qualities of the Lord. You could either look at it by the conditioning, that all the different conditionings that are there, these are all just the different moods or attributes of the universal form, so of the Lord. Or you could take it as that the individual souls being part of the Lord, so just like the drop of water in the ocean, then there's that similar qualities, right? So whichever ones it is, but it's all part of the Lord's qualities, not that it's separate, right? In other words, they're not showing the separateness of the soul and God. They're showing more the oneness, right? Because then that brings out that relation, you know, means in other words, the element of the rasa or the element of the surrender, you know, that we're part and parcel of the Lord, so that surrender to the Lord, or he's taking care of us, so all these different kinds of moods can come up, right? See, but we don't have a problem with either. We describe it both ways. So now we can see is why sometimes it becomes... It appears that there's just so much philosophy, because all the different aspects of Vaishnava philosophy, we discuss them at different times, depending upon the situation, which is the one, whether we bring out the oneness in these two aspects or the difference, you know, or the oneness and difference, or the simultaneous oneness and difference, right? Like that. Okay, does that make sense between the pure monism and qualified monism? Right. So pure is we're part and parcel of the Lord. So that's you know, it's just very. It means in other words, just by the emphasis is on the tattva aspect, while Ramanuja is putting it more on the qualities. So it's more bringing up, though it is tattva, but you're bringing out that element of the rasa, the relationship. Does that make sense? Yeah. 2. difference between Vallabha's pure monism and Madhva's dualism. While Vallabha regards the world and the souls as non-different from Brahman, to Madhva they are totally different. Means that they are all transcendental, but he won't use the word Brahman there, you know, like that. So the point is that the souls is non-different from Brahman, meaning that means there's only God. So what is anything going to be made out of? Right. Mm. So Madhva will be saying everything's coming from God, but he'll bring out once it has appeared. Means it has come from God, but now that it's here, he's focusing on the difference. While the others, you know, because of the difference, because you don't want to give any way for the Mayavadi philosophy to find a foothold, right? Okay. That's the main point.
In the Nyaya Sambandha aspect, they consider the world is separate from God. That's one of the premises. Its origin is coming.
Its origin is from God, but once it's created, they don't really refer back to God. You know what I'm saying? If you say, where does it all come from? They'll say, God is there. And, you know, he's the one that deals with everything. But their process of logic, they say just by logic, you'll be able to liberate yourself. Because the point is, that it's their logic is not for understanding God, because it's already taken for granted. It means you establish that God is there, but only so that you can explain the basis of what you're dealing with. Right, so you have to have your, what is it? Is it ontology or epistemology? One of those explains existence.
Ontology.
Right, so your existence. So they explain that in their ontology. But as far as their Abhideya goes, it's just logic. Right, so it's not so much that it's just your logical, then you'll be able to separate yourself from matter. Right, and having done that perfectly, that there's no connection at all between matter, then you're liberated. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I asked that because we were reading, and there was a doubt if God would, in their logic, be responsible for the forms of this world and for all this, the blueprint in our language, for the Nyaya.
I think they don't go so far, because see, in Shankhya you'll see that'll come up. Shankhya, then that's manifest, because you have that whole process of creation is important. So for them you're reversing the process. But for Nyaya you're just being logical and separating from yourself from everything. So it's not so much that whole process of creation. Vaisheshika, then you're making the distinction between matter in its natural state and matter in its state that's caused by the interest of the living entities. Does that make sense? Yeah. Means the living entity, they are interested in interacting, trying to enjoy the world. Therefore, it's arranged that the atomic particles form together into that those forms that we call whatever it is. Does that make sense?
Because here Madhva is stressing the difference. I mean, the Shankaracharyas or the Shankarites, they would have come from the line of one.
Yeah, but they're not even using Nyaya. No. I mean, that means everybody uses Nyaya, but it's their basis is not Nyaya. Their basis is Vedanta. You know what I'm saying? So they won't use that. But they do feel that by logic they'll be able to make everything work out. You know? Because it's also a thing of I'm not this, I'm not that. You know, so it's not that they don't use various aspects of these things. You know what I'm saying? So everybody's using all the various same aspects. So the point is whoever's done the best work in that area, that's what you use. And if there's something you need for your philosophy, more detail in an area, then you develop it. So there, each acharya has put together and that. But stuff that's already been developed, you don't have to develop. It's not that Madhva has a different system of logic than what Gotama came up with. It's the same thing, just that we'll use it connected with establishing bhakti. Right, so in other words, we'll use it to convince the materialistic, you know, intelligence and mind that, you know, we are not this material energy and we are beyond, so therefore we should take up devotional service. Well, the Nyayas are simply using it to understand I'm not the body, so therefore I'm not part of material energy, therefore I become liberated. Because again, their point is I'm only conscious because I'm conscious of matter. If I'm not conscious of matter, then I'm not conscious. I just exist in this neutral state. So again, we see basically, you know, it's atheism, because it's like the non-Vedic schools of just voidism. Because it's just, well, it means what's that state of existence? You're existing but unconscious. You know, so it's only a step better than you don't exist and you're unconscious because you don't exist.
It's a small step, though.
Yeah, but you know, it's you know, important, because it'll be easier to talk to them than it will be to those who are actually, it's a non-Vedic philosophy. It means the Shankarites, you have Vedic philosophy to deal with, so you can use Vedic Praman to establish. But the problem is their philosophy is not Vedic. Mm. It's Buddhism. You know, and then if you're talking Buddhists, then it's even more hard, because they don't accept the Vedas and they don't have the Vedic philosophy.
Pretty much avoid everything.
You're saying, just like, let's say, in the modern scenario, then there's the monotheistic philosophy, but there's no monotheistic culture to go with it. So therefore, on philosophy, you can actually have a very good discussion. But when it comes to the culture, that's when all the problems come up. Right? Does that make sense? Most people, if they have a problem with the, you know, the Hare Krishna movement, it's not the philosophy, it's the culture. Yeah. Because they come from a background where there isn't a culture connected to the philosophy. So their point is, why does philosophy have to be connected to the culture? Right? You just do whatever you need to do to be practical, to, you know, live your life and make money. And then you have your philosophy. So they're quite accustomed to that. I mean, 2,000 years they've been doing it. So it works for them. You know what I'm saying? It's just that's the modern... that. So if one comes from an ethnic group where the religion and the culture and philosophy are more connected, then they'll have less problem with the culture and with the rules and regulations of the culture. Like that. But others will be, you know, very good at philosophy, but just they don't connect that culture is important. Why do you need culture? If you have the philosophy, what do you need the culture for? You know, you just use whatever's there. Because that's what's going on in the world. It's just whatever's the common, basically, whatever's the common ground that everybody can relate to. Right? You know, so then that works.
So just clarifying, in the terms of the Nyaya philosophers, the affirmative that consciousness is accidental is what you mean. When you're conscious of matter, then it's accidental.
Yeah, no, it's coming from matter. So it's like means except for Vaishnavism, all other systems of philosophy, consciousness comes from matter. Like that. And some of them accept soul is beyond matter. But most of them, they're saying that the soul comes from matter also, right? So, you know, the conditioning they know comes from matter. But, it means, so it's a matter if they can even tell what the soul is. You know, so, like that. But, yeah.
Well, including Christianity?
Which?
Consciousness comes from matter.
Well, the body is the soul.
The body comes from...
Yeah, so
there's a distinction between matter and spirit.
Yeah, I don't think there's so much of a distinction. There's more of a distinction between good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, because heaven will descend to earth.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it means it's... People get to heaven, okay, but then those who have a little bit more problem with waiting, then, okay, it will descend here.
Right.
So if it descends here, you don't really have to ascend. So
no,
then you just have to somehow or another crawl out of your grave. That's all.
And
they'll
take you with you, or they'll stay here? The heaven will take you with you, or they will stay here?
Means, yeah, either heaven stays here, or...
You have to go with
you,
them. It's like the big...
Okay, so it means it might descend, and then you're all here, and then it'll lift off. Oh, okay.
As a suggestion.
Yeah, no, that's probably a good medium for that. Yeah, that.
The dualistic is when there's a difference between God and us, like God yeah. can't come here, so like that kind of dualistic idea.
Yeah. Yeah, but the thing is, well, we can go there, so strange he can't come here. So I mean, it's, you know, there's always going to be problems. Anything that's outside of Vaishnavism will always have major problems.
Isn't it like five ways that you establish what a philosophy is, isn't it? Who is God?
Yes.
Who are the Jivas? What are their relationship? What is the material entity?
Yes.
So they don't really have answers for that, so you can't have discussion, really.
No. I mean, if you keep it to that form that you kind of have, but they'll try to put it into something else. So basically, they'll always come back to a particular faith or a culture or something. But that's why it's going through this relation between God, matter, and the jiva. Right, so that's the next the creations. Okay, and. Yeah. Because that's the discussion. The discussion is chit achit ishwara. Once you've established that, then you can discuss your process. But if you don't know who God is and who you are, how will any process work? Right, it doesn't matter what you do. I mean, if you can't tell the difference between yourself and the potato, you're not going to be able to cook lunch. Yeah, don't cook. Fortunately, the oven's too small. Right? You know, otherwise. Yeah. You know, as you crawl into the oven, you tell the potato, you know, make sure you...
Turn on timer.
Yeah.
Make sure you turn on timer.
Yeah. Okay. Three, Nimbarka's view of Beda-Beda is different from the Vishishta-Dvaita of Ramanuja. The main point of distinction between that, while according to Ramanuja there's a difference, according to Ramanuja, difference is an attribute of unity. For Nimbarka, both identity and difference have equal status in reality. Difference is not secondary in his view. Right? Does that make sense? So Ramanuja's taking is that the oneness is the main point. Right, the identity is the main point. The difference is the secondary to that, because otherwise, how it means the identity, but there has to be separate identities, of course, to identify together. Just like you have members of a community, so they how is the community held together? Because they're all different? No, because they're all the same. Right, but naturally, for them to be a community, it has to be a community of different people. Right, you know, I can't have a community of one. You know? Like that. I'm sure some people, you know. I mean, you do have communities of one, right? You know, like that. You know, everyone kind of, when they come, they leave the room or, you know, go around or, you know, something like that. So you always have those. Okay, so he's taking is that they're both, means oneness and difference are both have equal status.
That's Nimbarka.
Yeah, because he's Beda Beda. So the oneness is a solid thing. The difference is a solid thing, right? They're both there.
So he's more close to us, Nimbarka, at this point.
No, because for us is both of them. That's what I'm saying. Any of these things that you see as a difference, for us we accept them both because it's. But for them, it has to be this way or that way. For us, it's simultaneously one and different at the same time. So for us, they're both. So when you're talking about rasa, then you'll bring out the point of the identity more. When you're bringing out the tattva, then you're bringing out the difference more. Because tattva means what's the definition of each category, right? Mm. But even in there, it's defined as, you know, servant to the Lord. Mm.
Each perspective, except the Chikabhidavadasa, that cannot explain it all in concrete.
Yeah, but for what they're trying to do within their philosophy, it's complete, it works. Mm-hmm. Like that, because the point is to become conscious of God and be able to go back to Godhead. Mm-hmm. So that any of the Vaishnava Sampradayas, is capable of doing, right? They're competent to do that. But the point is if you want to get the braja, then you have to be able to accommodate them all at once, because the point is on cause and effect, the effect has to have the elements of the cause. So the point is, if you can't accept all the four lines together, how are you going to accept the source of them? If Vrindavan is the source of all the other realms, that means all the other philosophies. So then, if you can't accommodate those, how you accommodate Vrindavan? Right? But we don't have to go through them to get there. We just, you know, directly deal with them all at once. You know what I'm saying? But you see, the others, they have a few points, they stick to that, and it works. For us, we have the Dasa Mool. Right? So then the Sambandhavideya Prayojana, the Dasa Mool. So all that, it works out very nicely. But it has, you know, a lot more of these subtleties. Nimbarka view is clearly different from Vallabha's. Okay. And there's no point of agreement between them. Vallabha is an advocate of pure monism, and difference is not real according to him. Because he's not making that difference. It's not that they just merge into each other. It's that there is that difference, but that's not the point. The point's not the difference. The point is the relationship between them. It's not, in other words, the relationship between Mother Yashoda and Krishna is not about the difference. It's about that affection that they have. So therefore, Vallabha emphasizes that. Right? Though, of course, they have to be two entities to be able to do that. But their point is that that's not the point, that there's any difference. The point is this, right? But because he's emphasizing more on means that aspect of the rasa, you know, does that make sense? Which is interesting. So you can see there's that switch there, because before, when you're comparing Ramanuja and Vallabha, then one is more on the tattva, one's more on the rasa. But at the same time, when you get to there, then they don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? Because rasa is rasa. You can't. Just like Shankaracharya, he didn't go near Bhagavatam. Because you can't do anything. It's a spotless purana. So if you don't want your people to... means if it's a problem for... it's against your philosophy, then it means in honesty, you don't go against it. You just avoid it. You know? That's the... point. So that's what we see is these other lines in the six systems, is they don't go against something in the Veda. It's just part that doesn't agree with their philosophy. They just avoid it. That's all. So it makes it easy. Right?
Well, what about twisting?
Sorry?
What about like twisting the meaning?
That they don't so much twist the meaning. They just take, like it's in the Upanishads, it does talk about the oneness of the Lord and, you know, the living and the creation, but they're speaking about the element of Brahman or that it's expanded from the Lord, but they're just taking it that oneness. So all the ones that shade the difference, they just ignore those verses. They just avoid them. So whenever you bring it up, they'll only quote these verses. They won't quote those verses. So they quote these, we quote those. You know, so then, like that. But the point is they're both correct.
But what would be their answer? Like, if you quote those, they just avoid?
Basically avoid or give another example that, you know, tries to do the, you know, the green bird, the green tree. If that didn't work, then the river merging into the ocean. Or, you know, something. They'll just come up with a different one. So that's the things. We don't have to worry that they're using these because it's all part of our philosophy. Then you start from there and then bring out the rest of it. Right? So then, that way then... you can work with anybody. Is that some sense? No, that's why it's saying that one, the Vedanta in general is the universal, but Shankara is only giving part of Vedanta. He's not giving the complete. So therefore it's not universal. Okay. 5. Nimbarka's assertion of two realities, independent and dependent, is not acceptable to Jiva Goswami. He has rejected this distinction and accepted God as the non-dual reality. Right? Because you're not, it means he is one. We always say he's non-dual.
Mm-hmm.
Because him and his energy is non-different. There's a difference, but at the same time he's non-different. So there's, you're only dealing with one. There's only one topic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So to make such a distinction between that independent and dependent. Right, the principle that there's independence and dependence is there. The Lord's independent, the jiva's dependent. But at the same time, it's just not overemphasized. Right? He does not accept souls and world as dependent realities, but as shaktis of God. Right? So in other words, it's not that they're complete realities on their own that are separate, but dependent on the Lord. It's just their energies of the Lord. Does that make sense? So you don't want to make that distinction too much, because we're all servants of the Lord. Why would you make that distinction to that degree?
Overemphasizing.
Yeah, it's just overemphasizing. So it's you know, but at the same time, as we'll say, you know, Om Purnama Adah Purnamida, whatever, everything that comes from the Lord is complete. But at the same time, it's non-different from the Lord. So it's not, we're not giving that. Yeah. That makes sense. He realizes the difficulty of reconciling the relation of both identity and difference between Shakti and possession of Shakti. But instead of calling one independent and the other dependent, he calls this relation achintya. Right? Because one is independent, one is dependent. We always talk about this. But the point is it's one or the other. It's both simultaneously. That's the point.
Yeah.
So and what we're saying is we don't see two realities and that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's two different realities that are simultaneously one. It means it's one reality that has two different aspects.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? The Shakti and Shaktiman. But as you said, is you can't, you don't make the distinction. Right?
In Rasa, they do reverse, right?
Reverse meaning?
Meaning like Krishna becomes dependent of Srimati Radharani sometimes.
Yeah. Point is to taste Rasa, that it's through his internal potency. Yeah. Okay. 6. Madhu accepted 3 eternal and real entities, God, soul, and matter. God is independent and soul and matter are dependent on him. But if the souls of matter are eternal like God, then how could Madhva say that God is the only independent reality? Dualism makes the supremacy of God impossible. If you take it completely, because otherwise then they're dependent. Right? So the point is that's why, how do you reconcile this? Because they are 3 eternal real entities. But it's because they're Shaktis of God. Understand? That's the important thing. So the thing of the problem is this Nimbarka's dual and Madhva's dual element. Right? Because it's going on simultaneously. Because when Nimbarka, Vallabha and Ramanuja are discussing the oneness, there are it's just understood that the difference is there, but that's not what's important. It's a secondary aspect. It's just part of the oneness. Right? Mm. So then, you're kind of dealing, though, they're not acknowledging it as simultaneous, but basically it is.
Yes.
But the others are saying, no, they're separate realities. But then that problem comes up, is then he's saying, you know, how do you make the supremacy of God? Because he's there, the jivas are there, the material energy is there. So, how does this work? Right, so if there isn't that element where the Lord, they are expanding from him and non-different from him, then that means you have 3 independent realities. So what even though you say they're dependent, but you have 3 realities. So how is that? What does that dependence mean? I mean, it has to have come from the Lord. It has to be part and parcel of him. That's why we always use these terms, part and parcel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But the point is that you don't have to worry. No one else has that You know what I'm saying? Because the Mayavadis wouldn't use our philosophy to defeat Madhva. So it only comes up between us and Madhva.
It would be a twist.
Yeah. Yeah, it just wouldn't. It wouldn't work out.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.